Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I'm your host, Pharmacist Eric Christensen. Thank you so much for listening. The drug of the day today is gabapentin, but before we get into that, want to make sure you guys go check out reallifepharmacology.com. I've got a free 31-page PDF on the top 200 drugs simply for subscribing to the podcast. We get you email updates when we've got new content available. So definitely don't hesitate to do that and get your free PDF of the top 200 drugs. Great study guide and review. All right, let's get into that drug of the day today, and that is gabapentin. Brand name is Neurontin. And if you have been around since the beginning of the podcast, I did cover this in combination with pregabalin. But I wanted to dig into some of the specifics about the drug a little bit more, and it has been 4 years since I've done it. So anyway, let's go through mechanism of action quick. Mechanistically, gabapentin binds and affects voltage-gated calcium channels. More specifically, if it comes up on an exam or something for you, it is the alpha-2 delta-1 subunit. And this action, by binding there and having action on voltage-gated calcium channels, is theorized to slow or modulate excitatory neurotransmitter release and or action. So ultimately, gabapentin is more of a central nervous system depressant, and mechanistically, that's how the medication works. Now, what would we use this medication for? Anecdotally, probably 70 to 90% of the time, gabapentin is used for various pain syndromes and primarily, neuropathic type pain. So obviously, you know, nerve pain, shingles, fibromyalgia, you'll see it used for sometimes, post-herpetic neuralgia, restless leg syndrome. That's where you're going to see it used the most. And if you happen to stumble into a patient who's on gabapentin, it's probably for that reason. Now, with that said, there certainly are exceptions to that. Gabapentin is classified as an anti-seizure medication. It has been quite some time since I've actually seen it used for that, but that is what it's classified as. So not incredibly common that you're going to see it used for that, but can be. Anxiety and psych-related issues, I have seen it used some there. Menopause symptoms occasionally, where we've tried and failed other therapies maybe. Rare things, itching, alcohol withdrawal, I believe I have seen occasionally as well. But again, these are much, much less common indications, and we're going to focus mostly on the pain-related indications there. Dosing, I want to tip on that a little bit. 3 times a day is what the typical dosing is going to be. You will see that backed off a little bit based upon renal function and or if pain is at a certain time of the day. So if a patient has restless leg syndrome and it's only at night, probably makes sense you're only going to see gabapentin once a day at night in most situations there. As far as pain management, if you need pain coverage all throughout the day, you're probably going to dose it 3 times a day, again, unless maybe they have some renal impairment. And the reason being for that is half-life is around 5 to 7 hours typically for gabapentin in most patients with somewhat normal renal function. Adverse effect profile, sedation, dizziness. Those are the two major ones that you're going to see with gabapentin. Sedation and dizziness can obviously be a significant problem in our elderly patients, particularly those at risk for falls. So we obviously, you know, try to minimize the use of gabapentin, and if it's necessary, we try to minimize the dose, minimize the duration as much as possible there. Other adverse effects, edema, weight gain, I have seen this occasionally. I would say it's not as common as sedation and dizziness, but it can occur there. Anaphylaxis, more on the rare side of things, of course. There have been skin reactions reported, and behavioral changes as well have been reported, maybe more so in pediatric patients. So anytime you start a new medication that works in the central nervous system, probably a good idea to pay attention to any type of unique or abnormal behavioral changes. Tolerance and dependence has been reported to develop with gabapentin. It's important to note that stopping the medication, there certainly are reports of withdrawal symptoms, or some patients can experience that. Again, probably depends upon the dose and duration of use. If you've got a patient that's on higher doses, they've been on it for years, that might be a patient that's more likely to experience withdrawal symptoms. So unless you have a compelling indication to stop it quickly, or a severe adverse effect to, you know, abruptly stop the medication, it's advisable, in my opinion, to taper that medication when possible, of course, with a few exceptions. Some of the withdrawal symptoms that you might see if you go too quickly on reducing the dose, or abruptly stop it, or patients maybe forget to take it, or go on vacation and they don't have it, for example. Anxiety, sweating, confusion, irritability. A lot of those kind of overlap with opioid withdrawal. So if you kind of lump those two together, in my opinion, opioid withdrawal is probably a lot more severe and significant than gabapentin withdrawal, but again, might depend upon the patient, the dose, duration, and so on and so forth. With that tolerance and dependence risk, again, not crazy risk, not like, you know, morphine and oxycodone and some of the Schedule II controlled substance opioids. However, the DEA has not categorized gabapentin, at least at this point, as a controlled substance. However, know your state laws. There are some states that have categorized it as a controlled substance that need to be, you know, counted and audited and so on and so forth if you're working within a healthcare institution. So important to pay attention to that and obviously know your state and federal rules and regulations if they change. Kinetics, I alluded to a little bit. Shorter half-life, 5 to 7 hours. That goes with the multiple daily doses typically. It is primarily eliminated through the urine. Very, very important to recognize that as patients age, renal function typically declines. I've had numerous patients in my practice where gabapentin has certainly had to be reduced over time, where maybe they tolerated gabapentin at the current dose they're at, and they're in their 50s and 60s, not an issue, but, you know, as they approach 70, 80, maybe that dose that was tolerable before for them is no longer that way. So pay attention to that, that gabapentin can certainly accumulate as renal function declines. It is virtually or significantly eliminated through the urine. That's its primary way of being eliminated from the body. Absorption is the other pharmacokinetic parameter that I absolutely wanted to talk about. So when gabapentin is taken orally, immediate release, the drug requires basically a transporter to get across the gut, or it uses a transporter primarily. And with that, that transporter can become what's called saturated. So basically, there's a bunch of drug built up on the inside of the gut, and only so much gabapentin can get through. So what that means is, as you get to higher and higher doses and try to push the dose, giving a significant amount of gabapentin at one time, that percentage absorbed goes down. So basically, you don't get as much bang for your buck as you escalate the dose, or you may not get as great a response as you think you might as you escalate the dose of gabapentin. And I've got some numbers here to back that up. So at 900 milligrams per day, the percent absorbed is 60% at 2,400 milligrams per day. So that'd be like 800 three times a day. That percent absorption is 34%. So, you know, we went up on the dose maybe a, you know, a time and a half, and the percent absorbed went from 60% to 34%. So it almost got cut in half. So again, just goes to that theory of you're not going to get as much bang for your buck as you escalate the dose of gabapentin. All right, let's take a quick break from our sponsor and we'll wrap up with drug interactions. If you're in the market for pharmacist board certification study material like BCPS, ambulatory care, BCMTMS, geriatric exam, NAPLEX if you're a pharmacy student, go check out meded101.com/store, STORE. I've also put links in the show notes to this podcast episode. In addition, if you're a nurse, med student, PA, nurse practitioner, other healthcare professional, I've got links to books in the show notes for this episode as well. So go check that out. Find something that's going to fit your practice. There should be something for everybody there. And support the podcast, Real Life Pharmacology. All right, let's get back and talk about drug interactions. So gabapentin being primarily renally eliminated, that is a typically a good thing as far as drug interactions go from a metabolic standpoint. So we don't really need to worry about the liver much with gabapentin. So CYP3A4, CYP1A2, CYP2C19, we really don't have much cause for concern there, which is nice when it comes to monitoring drug interactions for sure. However, there certainly are some additive effects that could happen. So CNS depression is the one I think of all the time. Opioids are probably the highest risk agent, where we increase the risk of sedation, CNS depression, respiratory depression, and obviously opioid overdose type symptoms when we use these medications together. So if you're going to give gabapentin to somebody on opioids, you really got to watch for that closely and be really cautious with dosing. And maybe if you're adding gabapentin, maybe we can try to reduce the opioid burden that they're currently taking. So, use those meds with extreme caution. There's definitely warnings in literature and all that sort of stuff regarding the combo use and how it does increase the risk for drug overdose. Other meds, of course, that can have additive CNS depression type activity. So Z drugs like Zolpidem, for example, tricyclic antidepressants that have, you know, anticholinergic activity. Same thing with first generation antihistamines like diphenhydramine, alcohol, benzodiazepines, lots of drugs that have that CNS depressant type activity. And using gabapentin in combination with those could have that additive type effect. Another additive type effect to think about is edema. So I mentioned that as a potential adverse effect. So adding gabapentin on to somebody taking pioglitazone, taking NSAIDs, for example, this is going to potentially exacerbate that edema worse. Okay. Always depends upon dose, you know, and that type of thing as well. But using multiple agents together that have similar adverse effects, you can possibly expect that it's more likely you're going to run into those adverse effects. Heart failure, I did want to mention as far as kind of drug-disease interactions. So knowing that gabapentin can cause edema, it is possible that heart failure symptoms and fluid status could be worsened by gabapentin. So definitely pay attention to that. And in particularly thinking about the polypharmacy world and the prescribing cascade, what I've seen happen in practice numerous times is gabapentin started for pain or whatever indication we're using it for. And shortly after that, within week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, we get Lasix furosemide either started for fluid retention and or increased for fluid retention. So that kind of goes, that's a perfect example of the prescribing cascade. I've put tons of these examples in my book, Perils of Polypharmacy. That is a wonderful book for anybody. I'm obviously biased, but it's a wonderful book for anybody that works in geriatrics frequently and polypharmacy patients. Go check out, Perils for Polypharmacy. I don't think you'll be disappointed with all the examples that you'll either learn or re-remember. So go check that out for sure on Amazon. All right, that's going to wrap up the podcast for today. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, found it helpful, leave a rating, review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. Of course, share us with your class listservs, students, preceptors, teachers, anyone in the healthcare space who could benefit from a little pharmacology education. So please, please, please share the podcast with those folks. If you want to reach out to me, suggestions, comments, mededucation101@gmail.com. Please support the show by checking out those links in the show notes. And, of course, track me down on LinkedIn as well, Eric Christensen, PharmD, BCPS, BCGP. Thanks so much for listening, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.